Look that up. My name is Lisa. I am the host of the Environmental Hour, which is coming up at 10 o'clock. Our guest today is Steve Russell from the Friends of Mount Sunapee, and we're going to be talking about old growth forest, an old growth forest in his neck of the woods that has been kind of protected for about 110 years, but we need to get it over the line to permanent protection. So coming up next, the Environmental Hour, and to kick us off, some Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young.
One morning
So the story today that we're going to tell you is a story that is historic, and it goes back over 100 years we're talking about Mount Sunapee in the western part of the state, and it goes back over 110 years ago when 90% of New Hampshire had been deforested. At that point, the remaining lumbermen in the state were kind of taking down the last bits of remaining forest. And one of those foresters recognized that near the summit of Mount Sunapee, there was a stretch of forest, 500 acres more or less up there, maybe more, that had never been cut. So at that point, the forest was over 250 years old, and he stepped forward and said, "We shouldn't cut this. This is a lumberman, and he's saying we shouldn't cut this forest." As a result, the New Hampshire Society for Preservation of Forests got involved, and this was one of the first reservations that the Forest Preservation Society kind of took on and preserved. Since then, this stretch of forest has had a rocky existence because it's located within the boundaries of Mount Sunapee State Park. And if you think, well, if it's inside the park, then it's protected. Mount Sunapee has the very interesting and unique condition in that half of Mount Sunapee Park is leased out for the ski area that exists there. And so there's this this lack of connection between or there's overlap between this conservation mission and the ski area. And so today, this stretch of old growth forest is still is threatened with fragmentation and encroachment and destruction. So I was fortunate to be invited to hike through this stretch of the forest a couple of weeks ago with Steve Russell and another of his cohorts at the Friends of Mount Sunapee State Friends of Mount Sunapee, and we had a really remarkable day. And so Steve has agreed to come onto the air to talk about this history, the story, and the work that his group is doing to permanently protect this old growth forest. So I'm going to hope this technology is working, and let's see. Steve, can you hear me? And here he is. It's magic. Yeah. So Steve is, as a guest may or may not be aware, although WSCA is getting back up, ramping back up here in the studio, we are not yet inviting guests to come into the studio due to social distancing and COVID concerns. And so, you know, we all have to get up to speed on the fancy magic of technology and using the board. So I greatly appreciate your patience with me, Steve, and getting us together here on the airwaves. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Lisa, and Portsmouth Community Radio for all your great work promoting awareness of crucial environmental issues. Friends of Mount Sunapee is a nonprofit citizens group. We formed in 2004, working to preserve the essential public values and irreplaceable natural heritage of Mount Sunapee State Park. And today we're here to talk about Mount Sunapee State Park's amazing forest, which Lisa was able to experience. I think one of the first things that one feels when you enter into these areas is just the plethora of understory vegetation. It's quite remarkable, the diversity of plants that exist in the understory, and then the magnificent trees themselves, which are not uniform. They're twisted and turned in all kinds of amazing directions to utilize every effort to gain the sunlight and transmit the water to the forest floor. And so today we're talking specifically about a unique state-documented 484 system that includes ancient forest. And the ancient forest on Sunapee is part of a larger forested system that ensures its survival. And these forests have escaped human modification and are part of the less than one-tenth of 1% of documented ancient forest in the state of New Hampshire. They have evolved the resilience to sustain natural disturbances, including fire, drought, hurricane, ice storms, and insect infestations, and are essential in maintaining the health of our environment.
So Steve, one of the magical aspects of that I got to experience hiking through this forest was, is first of all, that there are existing trails that navigate through these forests. And as a 10-year backpacker, it was really special to hike through being really aware of what I was hiking through. So if this had been 20 years ago and I didn't realize and I didn't know that I was hiking through an old growth forest, I might have been, you know, curious at some of the trees or, you know, interested, but I might not have gotten kind of the full scope of an impact of hiking through this forest, which was like you said, it's really interesting because we had maple, ash, beautiful white birch and yellow birch, huge, enormous, not necessarily enormous in girth, but you know, when I think of white birch, you don't think of most white birch, which are, you know, which are probably, you know, 12 inches in diameter or less. I mean, these were really massive, as well as northern alpine spruce and some of the other species. And then, of course, mm-hmm. one of the extra treats, which was just wonderful, was the plethora of pink lady slippers that we got to enjoy right along the trail. We saw more than 20 or 30 of them, which was just, you know, an extra special treat. So there is this just magical quality and this reverence that I really felt, but that's me maybe, as I was hiking through, knowing how old this forest is and how many efforts have gone in to keeping it undisturbed. And that's kind of really what we want to talk about, is this the history of the efforts to keep this undisturbed and how we still haven't quite crossed that final goal line yet.
Sure. So the first efforts to preserve Mount Sunapee's amazing forest date back to the first decade of the 20th century, 1909 to be specific. The Forest Society at that time was this, a very specific chapter. The Sunapee chapter of the Forest Society was headed by a man named Herbert Welsh. And he lived in the town of Sunapee, and he had a great view of the mountain from his home. And they, as he and his neighbors were getting ready to pack up to go back to their homes, he was a resident of Pennsylvania, they noticed that there was logging going on, that they could actually see it from their homes. And so he immediately became alarmed and, you know, started talking to his neighbors, who were actually quite active members of the Forest Society and who were well aware of the forest degradation that was going on throughout the state. And so they, what was going on at Sunapee was quite familiar to them. And so he was able to then contact a man that you mentioned, a man named Philip Ayers, who was the Forest Society's first forester. And Philip Ayers was involved in both the creation of the White Mountain National Forest, which he was working on at the time, and also as a member of the Forest Society, he was active in creating the Forest Society's first forest reservation, which was completed in 1911. So it was 656 acres. It was free and open to the public. People could, they had constructed trails throughout the forested system. There was a trail that went to Lake Solitude. And so it was, you know, left pretty much intact. And over the years, Forest Society acquired more, they made more and more land purchases. And by 1948, they had about 1,150 acres of the reservation consisted of 1,150 acres. And the state of New Hampshire at that time was interested in Mount Sunapee and developing it as a ski area, recreation, outdoor recreational area. And by that time, so we went from 1909 to 1948, a lot of what was known about the old forest, that knowledge had kind of receded, and people didn't really remember it too much. And we're talking 3 years after the end of World War II, and people were, you know, they were just in a different frame of mind.
Sure.
And so... so then the state park was created, and, you know, there was some cutting through some of the ancient, not the ancient forest, but through some of the forested areas. And there wasn't really any environmental consciousness about it up until 1987, when the state of New Hampshire passed what was called the Native Plant Protection Act. And then there began to be concern about, okay, well, what are the environmental impacts of development?
So if I can
1997, there was a man named Chris Kane, who was an intern with the Bureau of Forests and Lands, and Chris was also a somebody who knew a lot about ancient forests, and he was up in the Sunapee area and noticed that the mountain had a lot of characteristics that would seem to support an old growth forest. So he hiked up there and then documented it as much as he could.
Okay.
And then in 1998, state went up and then officially started documenting the old forest up there.
Right. So, but if we can kind of just put this in a little bit of kind of historical context, right? So I'm trying to think of what Philip is looking at in 1909 when he's looking out across the landscape. So as we mentioned, 90% of New Hampshire is deforested.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to think about like what he sees when he's leaving his New Hampshire. Is much of this deforested, and kind of is Mount Sunapee kind of the last bastion of forest, kind of as far as the eye can see?
I think that yeah. I mean, it was clearly recognized as a special place, and there was a. In 1915, Philip Ayers and published the Manual of Mount Sunapee, which is documents the old forest up there, as well as the flora and, you know, animals and geology.
Right.
And in that description of the old forest up there, he talks about a primeval forest. And he's very clear that what he means by that is that that it's a place where there was no disturbance of the underbrush. And I mean, underbrush is a very crude term, but the vegetation underneath. And so he was clearly amazed that there was still a forest of this quality in existence, considering what was going on in the state.
And Philip himself was a lumberman, or was he solely a conservationist?
He was a forester. So you have to remember, back in that time period, there weren't too many foresters. Foresters were people that the first one was Gifford Henshaw, who was became the first registered forester in the U.S. and that was, you know, in the early 1900s. So Philip Ayers was not long after that, and so a forester has, you know, they manage forests, but they're also extremely aware of, you know, what a forest consists of,
right,
how to look at it.
So he was one of the first kind of official trained forest scientists, forest ecologist, you might call him.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's really, I'm just trying to put this in context as kind of what's going on,
sure,
right? So you're just like, it's the 1900s and much of New England has been deforested, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you still have people like Philip Ayers, who are coming up from Pennsylvania, right? Named for Penn's Woods, remember? Anyway, coming up from Pennsylvania, through this basically shaved clean New England, and then finding this and living next to this gem of a place that he loves, and so he works to preserve it. He works with, clearly there are other groups gaining awareness of this issue, because the Society for the Preservation of New Hampshire Forests is organizing themselves into an advocacy group just about this time, right? Turn of the century.
Right. In 1901. When they started.
Right. So you're looking at the first decade of the 1900s being a time where people are really starting to build awareness and advocacy for forests. And then we get through World War One, and then World War Two, and you have an exhausted nation, right? You have an exhausted nation, an exhausted globe.
Sure.
But you've got some economic, you know, after the Depression, you've got some economic growth and development, and people wanting to get outdoors and recreate. And so that's when we have the formation of Mount Sunapee State Park.
Correct.
And the state itself created the ski area on this park. So,
it's pretty much. I mean, they were in the 1930s. There was a group called the Newport Ski Club, and they had carved out some rudimentary trails through there.
Right.
But yeah, when the state took over, they put in a lift, and they began to develop it in a big way.
I see. And so you can see how, right, so you see the state looking at, okay, we own this resource, this mountain. People are looking to recreate. We're looking to, how can we use this resource to develop a tourism industry, to bring dollars into the state, et cetera. And so they build the industrialized ski infrastructure on Mount Sunapee, which they then operate for 50 years. And the footprint of that operation, although it's nearby the old growth forest, it's not, to our knowledge, it didn't.
Well, the proposals, the ski trails and lifts that were constructed by the state are not what we're talking about today.
The existing infrastructure.
What we're talking about today is, we are talking about it, but the ski infrastructure that the state developed was pretty crude and not extensive, not nearly as extensive as what's going on the mountain today. Okay. So there is a difference.
So again, so the state comes in and they start to build some infrastructure in the late 40s. It's not until 40 years later when the, remind me, 1987, the name of the legislation, the Natural Heritage.
Right, the Native Plant Protection Act.
Right, the Native Plant Protection Act gets passed 40 years later. And, okay, so what's done is done. We don't really understand quite that what that impact is, and yet, despite that act being passed, which is now 35 years old, yes, 35 mm-hmm. years ago, we have the documentation from 1915. We have some documentation that was then done in 99, and then in 2004 by Chris Kane,
correct?
Where Chris actually, unbeknownst, he did not know, as my understanding, about the 1915 report when he identified this area that he thought was ripe for meeting the requirements of an old growth forest.
Right. So initially, Chris was unaware of it, but he became aware of it,
sure.
And it helped not only him, but it helped Natural Heritage Bureau, which is the state agency tasked with assessing rare biological and great examples of biological heritage in the state.
Mm-hmm.
It informed them,
sure,
as to you know, what was up there in the higher elevations of the mountain, and they, you know, I mean, it was a jumping off point, let's put it that way.
Right, and validated Chris's Chris's hypothesis and his field data. So you're listening, I want to just take a quick break. You're listening to the Environmental
Sure.
Hour here on WSCA, Portsmouth Community Radio. My name is Lisa, and our guest this hour is Steve Russell from the Friends of Mount Sunapee. We're talking about an approximately 500-acre parcel of contiguous old-growth forest that dates to being at least 350 years old, with no evidence of ever being cut. This is a story that is particularly of interest to me as a longtime backpacker, but also as a person who really cut their teeth on the preservation of old growth forests in the western part of the country, out at Tongass in Alaska, and in and I had no idea, believing that much of all of New Hampshire had been deforested. I didn't realize that such a large patch of old growth forest even existed here in New Hampshire. And so when I learned about this at a webinar on Earth Day that Steve participated with the Sierra Club, I said, I want to go. I want to see what this is. I want to learn more about it. And I want to share this with the rest of the public who like me are ignorant that such a resource exists right here an hour and a half away from our driveways. So we're going to take a quick station ID break and hear from a couple underwriters. And then I'm going to play a song that Steve picked for the show. And when we come back, he'll tell us why he picked it. And we'll continue.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
They
took all the trees, put them in a tree museum.
So those of you who are new to my program, I always offer up to my guests the opportunity to curate the music that we use for interludes on our interview. And these are choices, Carry On by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young opened the show, and Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell. So, Steve, tell me how these songs, clearly the Joni Mitchell song needs really no explanation.
It's pretty clear.
It's pretty clear. But how these songs kind of resonate and motivate you to keep on carrying on.
Keeping on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just think that you have to keep these special places near and dear to your heart, and sometimes that's at the point of, risking a feeling of loss. It's almost like being in a relationship that, there's no guarantees, but the songs are reminders, and they're reminders that we can't allow something that's irreplaceable to be taken away.
Right.
They'll never be another ancient forest system on Mount Zanabe like the one that's currently there. When we look at these issues, it's kind of like, well, what is in the best long-term interest of the public? And seeing is a great thing. That's really, there's a lot of people that are passionate about it, and there's a lot of environmentalists that are passionate about skiing. But in terms of the long run, and especially now where we are with climate change and in this part of New England, and we have to look at the real big picture. And the real big picture, I think, suggests that we want to preserve these special places. That the public will be better served in the long run.
So the planet, right. So to be clear with our audience, nobody is suggesting that we should tear down the Mount Sunapee ski area for these forests.
No, absolutely not.
And there's nothing
and
about
my point
the.
I'd like to make real clear here
right.
is that the preservation of the ancient forested system on Mount Sanabe would not impact existing skiing as it is on the mountain today. Would not have absolutely no impact.
Right. So there's
just to make that point clear.
So at the current configuration, the two systems, the ski area and the old growth forests, and its surrounding kind of protective mature forests are cohabitating quite well, as far as all can tell. The concern is that there is permission on the books to allow expansion of the current ski resort, adding additional lifts and additional trail cutting that would encroach upon and fragment the mature and the old growth forests, and that's the concern. I have to say that I count myself as a passionate skier and as a passionate environmentalist. So I'm very sensitive to this. As much as I enjoy skiing, I don't want it to happen at the expense, clearly, of such a gem that you don't get back. We got to wait 500 years to start a new one. So it just doesn't make sense to me to tamper with this. On the other hand,
it's part of the charm of Sunapee too. When you're up there and you're basically skiing all around the system. I mean, there's some areas that aren't part of it, but that's what makes it so
enchanting.
Beautiful. I mean, you're up there, you're in this forested system, you're looking down at this gorgeous lake. I mean, I think if skiers had the knowledge that they were, in a majestic forested system, that would actually be a positive for them. I think they would feel good about it.
Absolutely. And knowing that they did something to protect it and to I don't know, for its so that it you know continues to thrive and be a source of, as you mentioned, both a counteract to climate change, a carbon sink, as well as a habitat for a great biodiversity, is I can't think that they would be opposed to that. Here's the thing. Here's the crux of the issue, though, is how do we do outreach and inform people about this gem that we have, so that we can build awareness and advocacy for it without, quote unquote, putting it in a tree museum, right? So
right.
So we don't want to put these in a tree museum.
I think the thing is that, you know, what we're doing right now, right this moment, is we're reaching out to a lot of people and educating them on a resource that maybe they didn't know was in New Hampshire. My personal experience has been that anybody that I've discussed this with, talked to them about, even while hiking on the trails at Mount Sanapee, just complete strangers, they're uplifted by the knowledge of, you know, that they're in a special place. And so I think, you know, the educational outreach is an important component. We've done several presentations of our Everlasting Forest Mount Sanapee story, which is a PowerPoint presentation, which you can see on YouTube. You could also log on to our FOMS website, Friends of Mount Sanapee website, at www.friendsofmountsanapee.org. And you can join our effort, you know, helping to expand our public outreach campaign through social media. And lastly, you know, people could contribute financially to ensure our message reaches all concerned residents. I think this is a kind of a positive thing for people to get involved with, that they, you know, if they felt it's an empowering thing that we can bring something positive to the environmental situation that we're in. So I would just encourage everyone to
step up
to our Friends of Mount Sanapee website.
Yeah, yeah. So let me just say, I will tell you that, of course, my curiosity was piqued when I saw the YouTube presentation, which I will post on, which you can find through the Friends of Mount Sanapee website, or which I will post on the Environmental Hours Facebook page. I'll put a link there. So learning about it was one thing; experiencing it was another. And one of the amazing things, you know, Joni Mitchell's song, put all the trees in a tree museum and charge the people $1.50 just to see them. So
yeah,
you don't have to pay anything to see these. I mean, you have sweat equity. There's sweat equity because you got to hike up the trails. But there are trails that actually already wind their way through these forests, and they bring you up to Lake Solitude, which is a beautiful lake, and which the state of New Hampshire has just identified as one of the best places for nighttime sky watching, dark sky star watching. I crossed my path in the last week or so. So clearly it's an extraordinary place, and it's a place I want to spend more time in. And I encourage people, I know that what we've seen in the last 3 to 4 months, since the advent of, I guess 3 months since the advent of COVID, is is people here in New Hampshire are really searching for opportunities to connect with nature, right? They're working in their gardens, or they're looking for places to get out and enjoy and learn about nature. And so here's an opportunity that, that already exists. The trailheads and the maps on the trails are easy to find, and we encourage you to the trail is, it's a good workout, but it's not climbing Mount Washington. I mean, it's not that vigorous, and you remain right under the canopy the entire hike, which was lovely. So I do encourage you to
a lot of trails, almost every major trail in Sunapee, and Sunapee has a fairly extensive trail network, but all the major trails pass through the exemplary system, which is what we call the whole ancient forested system. And so you will be walking through no matter where you are. Once you get into the pretty much into the state park boundary, because some of the trails start from the outside of the park, the Andrew Brook Trail, for instance. But once you're in the park, you're pretty much in the exemplary system. So it is a magnificent opportunity to experience a pretty special place.
And I think, to me, it really, consolidated my interest in wanting more people who will advocate for this special place to step forward. As far as the immediate threat to fragmentation and encroachment by the permitted expansion, we know that the current lessee of the Mount Sunapee ski area, which is the Vail Resorts, they have released their annual operating plan for the coming year, and we know that they have in large part due to COVID and the current state of the economy, they are not planning to make any steps forward with the expansion in the next calendar year. Correct?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, stepping back a minute with this is that, you know, during this period of COVID, everybody's in a state of reflection. And I think even, you know, large corporations themselves are trying to figure out how they're going to deal with this. And a lot of fundamental underpinnings of what we consider to be normal are being re-looked at. And so when we look at, you know, what I said earlier about, you know, the preservation of the system will not impact the existing ski operation on Mount Sunapee, that's something that maybe that wasn't even something that would be on their radar. But Vail is a huge corporation. They have multiple ski areas throughout the country and in Canada and Australia, and they are undergoing a lot of uncertainty right now. And I'm not sure how high on the priority list Mount Sunapee would be, but I can't imagine it would be. They have a lot of very large resorts, and
sure, they are a behemoth in the ski world. I don't know if they're the biggest, but they might be. And so we don't necessarily see this as low-hanging fruit for their development. On the other hand, that gives groups like FOMS, that gives advocates groups like the Forest Society, that gives groups like the Sierra Club an opportunity in this period of uncertainty to say their development plans might be uncertain, but our value for this old growth forest is unchanging. That's not going to change. And so here's an opportunity where we can, you know, coalesce to really advocate for making sure that at the very least this doesn't become a low-hanging fruit for Vail, and then in the longer range find a way around this permit to say this is not going to happen, to protect this.
And the state is looking at You know, they are looking at the concept of natural areas, and this actually could become one of them, but it will not become one of them without public advocacy. And I really want to stress that people's involvement in writing letters and that it's really, really important, and that, you know, that the powers that be reminded that this is important. And I think, as Lisa suggested, that if people, you know, go there, hike the area for themselves, they will see that it is really special. And the public can play an essential role in making this happen, and that's why we're doing the public outreach campaign. And I would encourage people to write to the commissioner of the Department of Natural and Cultural Resources, Sarah Stewart, because she is the one. She could, by administrative decree, declare that a natural area. That's one option.
And would that nullify the permit that Vail is now has in its hands?
It would. I think that they would have to. Of course, they would have to work with Vail. But if we put this out there, and you know, the public is firmly behind it, then I think it increases the leverage that we have.
Sure.
I really believe that things can change, and
well,
that would be a first step.
If you didn't believe that public outreach and public outcry could affect change, you haven't been paying attention to what's been going on in the streets of America and around the globe for the last 3 weeks. And the repercussions of that. Clearly, you haven't been paying attention to things like, you know, the Native Americans' opposition to pipelines that have curtailed those pipelines, and there isn't a lot of great environmental news going on right now. But the courts are upholding shutting down pipeline transmissions, due in part to the outcry and the legal work of environmental groups to shut those down. So, you know, this is a environmental activism has many prongs. One of them is public advocacy and outreach. And, you know, I just want to give Steve particularly thank you, and extend my gratitude. We were chatting the other night, and he said we'd love to invite and encourage more environmental scientists and people with expertise to the Friends of Mount Sunapee to help to, you know, continue to do outreach. And I said, you know, of course, environmental scientists and those with expertise are important. But if all you needed was people with environmental expertise to stand up and say, you need to protect this, then we wouldn't be in the shape that we're in. What we really need is people with environmental expertise and people whose heart and soul are care about things like drinking water protection, water quality, carbon, global climate change, green spaces. You know, over and over and over again, the forest is a key ingredient to all of those causes, and so we need people who care about those things to step forward. I'm wondering if FOMS has a template of a letter that people could go to your website and find to use to kind of talking points that they could incorporate into a letter that they would write to the commissioner. That might be some.
So we don't have a template developed at this point, but I think we do have, which I can send along to you. I have a lot of what I call a talking points sheet, which, you know, covers all of the major points of why this, you know, special forest needs permanent protection. And you know, people can, you know, once they inform themselves a little bit and then and then read the talking points, that it'll be pretty clear to them, you know, what
why
the,
this is so
you
important.
Know, what's important and what to communicate.
So, and just, it is tomorrow's the first day of summer, and it is hiking season. If someone wanted to go up and hike through, where would they find good trail map information to get them started on a trip up Mount Sunapee?
So if you go, if you just go to the New Hampshire State Parks website,
okay.
And then you can navigate to Mount Sunapee State Park, there's a really good hiking map.
Right there.
Awesome. Right there.
So I was so fortunate to have you and Lydia as my personal guides that I didn't need to do that. I want to also give a shout out to the Kerrigan Mountain group that does all the trail maintenance on the mountain.
Yep, they do a lot of the trail along with the Kearsarge Regional, the Kearsarge Sunapee. I forget all the names of them, but they KSRG,
the Greenway.
Yeah, they do a lot of trail maintenance up there, and so it's, yeah, the trails are pretty well maintained.
Very well maintained. It was a very moderate how shall I say, like, it was a high value hike. I mean, it was, as far as the amount of exertion compared to the payoff. And so I highly encourage you. And the views of Lake Solitude were just, where we had lunch, was really just unforgettable. So you've been listening to the Environmental Hour at WSDA LP, Portsmouth Community Radio. My name is Lisa. I am the host. And coming up at noon, from noon to 4 or 5, we've got Pirate Friday, which Scurvy Dog is in the house putting together his show, and I know it will be incomparable as ever. Steve Russell from the Friends of Mount Sunapee has been with us today, and I want to encourage you to look into the Friends of Mount Sunapee. Visit their website. I will post a link to their YouTube video. It's about 25 minutes long, describing in detail the old growth forests and what the current situation is with regard to keeping it protected. But I wanted to thank you, Steve, for joining us. And also I wanted to let you introduce the last song of the day. For our listeners, we will not do a show next week, nor will we do a show on the observed 4th of July. So I will be back in July, and Dick Lutz should be back at that time as well. So the last song is by the Beatles. This is a song that Steve picked, and maybe you can give us a kind of our extra and let us know why this one moves you so much.
Well, I was I am a lifelong Beatles fan. I went to their last concert in 1966 in San Francisco.
Wow.
And you know, actually I have a whole room in my house devoted to the Beatles, but that's another thing. but because is a really wonderful song that I think encompasses, you know, a universal look at the precious world that we live in, and it's a masterpiece.
It's a masterpiece. This is Because by the Beatles, encouraging you to get out and have some fun this weekend. It's going to be hot. Hydrate. Take look out for each other and have some fun. This is Lisa. I'm sorry. Did you have a last minutes before we go out, Steve?
Oh, I was just going to say thank you. Thank you for inviting us on and helping us get this message out. We greatly appreciate it.
We appreciate it, too. Thanks so much for your good work.
You're welcome.
It turns me on. Because the wind is high, it blows my mind. Because the wind is high. Oh, love is old, love is new.